seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
And you're very welcome to Golf Weekly. I'm joined this week by John Huggan. Hi, John.
Hello, hello.
And by none other than the man who secured his, I don't know how many holes in one you've had in your career, but certainly you had one on the seventh hole on Friday at Trump Aberdeen, Gary Murphy.
Hi guys, how are you? Yeah, lucky number eight. It's probably the luckiest thing you can do in golf, but
hang on, is that your eighth hole in one?
Eighth hole in one, and I've two albatrosses, which I'm way more proud of. So,
That makes a heap of sense. Go on, talk us through it.
It's a really difficult golf course. The front nine was exceptionally tough. Probably, I would say 2.5 shots harder than the back nine, and I had just doubled the sixth hole, I think, to be two over after six first morning, going, this is not really the plan. And the seventh hole is about roughly kind of 180 up the hill. It's about a 170 shot, plays about 10 up the hill. The big bunker hitting over water, which is not in play. Unless you really miss hit one, but the bunker is quite penal and big backstop behind it. And I hadn't really hit the ball that well the first few holes. So anyway, I was hitting the seven irons, trying to hit it right of the hole. I knew it'd pitch at the flag. If I hit it properly, it'd pitch pin high and go up the backstop, and down it came. And I can't, when it landed about 5 yards right of the hole and about 4 yards past. Went up the bank and down into the hole, and yeah, it was awesome. It was a really good buzz. But being the golfer, I thought, well, that's two shots back, I'm only two over. So that was the kind of reality of it. But yeah, it was cool. And then as I walked off the green, the scorer at the back of the green goes, that's actually the third hole in one this morning, which completely burst my bubble.
Okay, so and Sam Little and Michael Block had holes in one on the seventh as well. But like, do you know what? Fuck off. Honest to Christ. Let the man enjoy the moment. Jesus Christ.
I know. It was like your school teacher giving you the real report on your paper when you thought you did well. But Block hit it. He hit it on the fly straight in the hole, which is incredible that it goes and stays in there. And then Sam kind of hit the very same shot I hit. And you know, it was a generous pin if you hit the right shot, and I'd say there was probably quite a few more that went very, very close, but to get it to go in the hole. And then I didn't hit the green the next 2 days and made two great up and downs, and then had a good shot on Sunday and I missed him about 20 feet. But I really enjoyed the course. It's different concept to the other, not as elevated tee wise, which is very difficult in linksy weather. Mm. And it's only a year old, and the condition of the course is incredible. And the people, you know, John Clarkson, the Irish guy, he's a, I'm going to give him the wrong title, but he's an agronomist, but an expert at growing grass. And the job they did there is incredible. And I think they're growing in British Bay as well. So it's good news for British Bay.
Yeah.
If they can get lucky with climate and stuff.
We'll talk about Trump Aberdeen, the course, in a second, but just to kind of recap. So Darren Fickart won the championship at 12 under. Gary, you finished a creditable 59th. You made the cut, so you played all 4 days. Happy with
51st, come on, 51st. Go easy.
Oh my God, I feel now I'm like the score. I'm like the marker at the back of the seventh green. Jesus, come here. But yeah. Overall, how do you feel? Like, I looked at the card, there was, you don't like the first that much. Double and two bogeys on the...
Yeah, the first hole was literally probably the only easiest chance on the front nine, but it's par five and it's kind of hallmark of up there. If you miss the fairway, it's in high fescue. So it's fairway, lost ball. And I thought Sunday morning warm up really nicely. Let's get going here and make a four up the first, push my drive right and couldn't find it.
Right.
I made a good seven, if there's such a thing. But yeah, lots of, it's even the seven I made on the sixth, I missed a fairway just left and I couldn't get it out of the broccoli. And yeah, it's very painful off the tee.
Overall, happy with your play, happy with the finish.
Yeah, I was delighted to make, this is a little insight into professional golf. So I was delighted to make the cut because I shot five over the first day and it was a shot outside the mark. And my wife and son were coming over on Friday with my son's best pal, James. And I opened up three over after two Friday afternoon. And I was going, yeah, they're probably landing now. And they're just going to turn the phone on and go, Daddy's going to miss the cut. So I was delighted to hang in there. I shot one under on for about the last 11 or 12 holes to make the cut. And really, I really enjoyed it. I have to say it was lovely to play four rounds. I hit a lot of really good shots, putted poorly for the 4 days. So even yesterday, you know, after a tough start, I could have easily broken par, and which is good around there because it's not easy. But Ficar 12 under is, you know, he's still on the main tour. It's still on the main tour.
And, come here to me. You like the course. You thought you liked the setup. I mean, I know I saw that some of the players were complaining about the setup, like the greens. Yeah. Some players didn't like the greens or the contours.
The you know, and I had a good chat with Jonas, the director of golf, afterwards. It the greens are a little busy, and there's a couple of tweaks to them, but I kind of try frame it like the week of a tournament. It's the best course you're going to play all week because it's the only course you're going to play. So there's literally no point, you know, there's no denying visually or optically. It's very challenging when it's not true link style. You can't run a shot in, especially when you're playing in high enough winds and you're onto tricky greens. And I thought they did a great job with the pins for the week because it could have been ridiculous, but it is what it is for the week. And you accept the challenge in front of you and try to play as well as they can. And if you don't, you know, if you got out of position, you know, it's easy to rack up a number. But I actually, they're not the greatest links golf courses in the world, but I really sadistically probably enjoy them. So I don't know why. John, and it's just a challenge, you know. You got to play really, really good golf to shoot a good number.
John, are you familiar with Trump Aberdeen?
I apologize, I've got the cough from hell. I'm familiar with the old course. I haven't seen the new one. And the slight criticisms Gary was saying about the lack of the option of running the ball in on the new course sounds very familiar. That was always my thing with the old course, is that the greens and the tees are way up high and it gets very windy up there. And I'm not sure that the average punter on a windy day could have much fun playing a course like that. I mean, I suspect that quite a number of people will have played there once and will never go back. That's the problem with courses like that. It's just too hard.
I think, John, if you're playing in a club match against some guy from Trump who plays off three or four handicap, he's a proper player. I'd say he's probably a plus, you know, a scratch golfer elsewhere, but I think for a box ticket, it's certainly one that you would want to take. I think it's even the second course is very different to the first course. So as a resort, it gives a good mix. I just love the play. I think the short game area, like I think the third morning, my caddy was saying to me, you'd be just happy to stay here and not bother going out. Like the short game area is sensational.
Yeah.
And it's great to see because they got rid of the other short game area, which was really good, and built a car park. And then I think it's important to have those facilities when you're, but the land that they had, like the only, it's all man-made. Like there's only about six holes at the back of the new course that are naturally through the dunes. So they've done a pretty special job.
It's certainly a spectacular piece of land, and it was kind of waiting to be a golf course.
John, if you're in the market for a new golf bag, they have a lovely leather bag in their carry bag, and it's 30, it's 1,300 quid. It's outstanding value.
Just the 1,300. Oh well,
just it. Might get two different colors. We mentioned Sam Little and Michael Block also scored aces on the first day. Michael Block, who's playing on a sponsor's exemption, so he on the third round he showed up a few seconds late. For his tee time was docked. Go on.
Yeah, I think he got his time. He was the game in front of me, and to see him running through high saturated fescue as a shortcut to try get up the hill. He was on the range hitting balls. I think he just got his time wrong, and so he was 8:22. He probably got there at 8:24. So 2-shot penalty, and which is not something you want on the front nine.
No.
That place.
He shot 42 on the front, so clearly was fighting the golf course a little bit and losing. But then withdrew. He bogeyed the 12th and then withdrew. Now
he allegedly walked in off 15, I think. He shook hands.
Off 15. So I'm looking at different reports. So some reports are saying that he never said anything to his playing partners, just walked off. Whereas he then came out afterwards and said, no, that's not true. I've told my playing partners I'm withdrawing. I've thanked them and the caddies. I've done everything right. I've handed over the scorecard. And all he did then was ask one of the scorekeepers for a lift back to the clubhouse. What do we know? I mean, look, there's a guy, Michael Block is an interesting character because, Jesus, there's a guy who's very good at getting headlines and probably did so for all the wrong reasons this time. But what insights can you give us, Gary?
He did shake hands and go, lads, I'm out of here, which is bizarre because literally the walk-in is exactly the same as playing the holes. It's a straight line to get back to the clubhouse. It's a bit like Troon. It's kind of out and in. And, you know, I don't care. And I don't mind saying this, but my little lad, who's a lovely player, he's down to 7. He played up in the Ulster Boys. His first under 16 championship, he's only 14. And he was full of beans. And he went up and shot 98, had a bit of a panic attack. And I said, did you try in every shot and do you own your score? And yeah, and that's it. So if you're trying to teach a 14-year-old kid that, you think a 50-year-old kid would have a little more guile than that. So it's disappointing because I think he was a good addition to the field. I met him a couple of times afterwards. He's a really nice, pleasant chap. He's very Californian, very, you know, American, but he was good company. He was very well received all week. He did a lot of good, and I just think, you know, it was a shitty way for him to finish his week. I think he'd be a good addition to the tour. He's obviously well able to play if he can top 10 it in a major 3 years ago. But it was bad form to finish the way he did.
Regardless, John, of, you know, whether you've walked off in a huff, you've walked off because you're just frustrated, whatever it is, as Gary says. And particularly, I wonder, like, you're there in a sponsor's exemption. Do you have, like, extra kind of obligation, you know, to fulfill the terms of the exemption? Like, you've taken a spot that could have gone to somebody else. So the least you can do is at least, you know, you're playing shite, whatever. Just get to the house and then, you know, try again the next day.
Yeah, I mean, I've got some sympathy with that point of view. I think there are obligations that come with getting a spot in an event that you're not really qualified for. But it seems to me his big mistake here was, and it's one he should never make, is that he disappeared away from the premises without telling any officials what he was doing.
Yeah.
I mean, that is so basic that nobody gets that wrong. You've got to tell the people that are running the thing where you are and what you're doing. And to just walk out, that's where his problem was. Mm. I mean, there's not really an excuse for that.
No, and I think it's a window into the fact that he never played on tour.
Mm.
You know, because I think if you've got an experienced tour player who's still able to play seniors golf, like you just don't do that. You know what I mean? You really don't do that. Which is a pity because I think he brought a lot to the event, but I'm not sure if it's going to help him going forward. I know John Daly played there a couple of years ago and made an absolute tool of himself, and he hasn't been asked back. So, you know, it's, I'd be a big stickler for a bit of decorum and etiquette in the game. I mean, we all know how difficult the game can be regardless, but you have to own the shit as much as you have to revel in the good stuff. You know, that's just the way the game is.
Yeah. I mean, look, I appreciate that he isn't here to defend himself or to explain his actions. So I'm conscious of that. But at the same time, I'm wondering if, and look, I take everything you're saying, Gary, a very nice, pleasant individual. Fine. Let's just take that as given. But that is there, what do you think that there's any merit in, As a sponsor's exemption, so he's de facto a kind of a bigger name. They like the idea of having a name like that. He elevate, you know, and as you said, like, this is a guy who finished top 10 in a major not that long ago. He's very American. So perhaps disregarding the etiquette and conventions of tournament golf because, for want of a better term, he's too big for it.
Well,
yeah, possibly.
I think that you can certainly justify if you take the view that, you know, tournament invitations are fine, which is pretty standard practice.
Sure.
Wherever you go. You can justify him quite easily. I mean, he's a name. Everybody's heard of him. He did well, as Gary said, in the PGA, two, three years ago. I made a hole in one playing with Rory. I mean, everybody's familiar with his name, or at least familiar with his face. So you can certainly justify him being there, but I just keep coming back to the one basic thing you got wrong. I mean, you can't walk off for no good reason. If you're not injured, there isn't a good reason for walking off under any circumstances. And to disappear without telling anybody where he was going, I'm sorry, you know, he's definitely got some pressure.
Yeah, it's poor form. It's poor form. I will admit, a number of years ago I was playing, and this is just me playing a regular friends in my home club, and I'd gone out and it was pouring rain and I was playing absolute garbage. And on the ninth, I just turned to my playing partner and went, listen, I'm in, I'm gone. And all these years later, my playing partner never lets me forget it, ever. That, like, I should never, ever have walked in. And I've never done it since. And so even for like a little kind of meaningless three ball where it's just amongst friends, the idea of just wandering in a huff, like in a wet huff after nine, was just not acceptable behavior. It's a lesson I've since learned, mostly because I get reminded of it at least three times a month.
Yeah. Well, we've all had embarrassing moments. I mean,
I've had plenty.
Back when I was young, I lost a club championship final once, missing a short putt on the 36th green to lose one down, shook hands with my opponent and then lobbed my ball over the wall beside the green, that, you know, and never to be seen again, in a fit of temper. You know, when the ball was in midair, I was thinking, get that ball back. But you have to live with these things. Everybody's done something stupid at some point in their lives.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, any other, like, now I remember, Gary, I think the first time you went to Trump Aberdeen, you waxed lyrical about the place. You were genuinely impressed. I think you were there when it opened.
Yeah, I think the big thing for me is I just adore Lynx golf, and the turf is like, it's such, when you get proper fescue grass, and maybe it's a harder thing nowadays because Poana is so keen to creep in and stuff. But when you get, you know, true fescue grass, it's just such a gift to play from. And when you, like, I was struggling kind of mid tournament. I was pulling my irons, but I was hitting them really, really crisply. But I was shutting the face too early in my downswing. But the strike was great. And you'd still look up at it and go, God, that felt lovely. So, you know, now the next one mightn't feel as lovely, but it's a pleasure to play off fescue grass. It's such a rare thing. And that's kind of most of it. You know, granted, it's not I'm never going to suggest it's a Muirfield or a Turnberry or a Portmarnock or Portrush or Waterville or any of that. But for what it is, it's I like it a lot. It's different, but it's just that, you know, even on, like even on 15 yesterday, it was par five. I hit it about 35 short left and had to go in over a little knoll, and just the sound of the contact. It's such a treat to play pure links turf.
Yeah, there was one. I went up there a couple of years ago to watch the final day of the senior event, and this would be on the old course, but it's the sort of place that encourages really interesting shots and play. And I went up there really early on the Sunday for one reason, was to watch Jose Maria Olazabal, who wasn't playing very well. I mean, he was off early on the Sunday, so he was playing, you know, poorly for him. But I watched him all 18 holes, simply because I knew he would hit three or four shots where I would just go, oh, what a
yes, miss. Exactly.
And he did. I mean, and I watched him play 18 holes, and then I left. I didn't even stay for the end of the tournament because that was all I was there for. That's the good side of the Trump course, is that for players at Gary's level, it's really interesting to play, I would imagine.
Yeah. It is like this. You've got a million options. Sometimes that's not the easiest thing, but I am a fan of the place. So.
Very good.
Not the golf bag in the shop when you're trying to get your young fella a bit of a treat. But there you go.
£1,300. I played Galway Bay on Saturday, so it's been taken over. It's part of that new Hawthorne Hotel, so it's now called Galway Bay by Hawthorne. I don't know if you're familiar with it, John, but it's a Christie Jr. Heathland design that's been around, and I played it a good number of years ago, and I went back. And this is an interesting one. You might explain this to me, Gary. So it had the original course that Christie designed had 120 bunkers when the crowd that owned the new hotel, it's a lovely hotel, by the way, they took out half the bunkers, but the course feels harder because the runoffs, it was just like, it was also incredibly windy. I mean, it was a really, it's a great, great golf course. I don't know. Do you rate it?
I played there years ago. We had we'd one tour event and then one event, which was a mix between challenge for a mentor. And I've played, God rest his soul, I think Christie Jr. was a great designer. I've played probably five or six of his courses, and I've yet to be unimpressed with any of them. So he's left us a great legacy. But I love Galway Bay. It's just that thing of, you know, it's a bit like the kind of Fairmont up in St Andrews. You can see the sea, but you're not really playing links. But it's a fabulous track. And bunkering is, I think the art of chipping and pitching the ball is something that it is getting lost to professional level with all this heavy rough around the greens. So when you've got options, then there's an excitement factor to it.
Yeah, one of the great things, and Gary will confirm this, I'm sure, about bunkering on a links is just the positioning of the bunker itself, in that you watch a ball, it's bounding along, and you think to yourself, you know, in about 5 or 6 seconds, that ball is going to be in that bunker away over there somewhere, because the land just feeds into the bunker. And that's one of the great things about links golf. I mean, it's great to watch. It's fascinating if you know what you're watching, and interesting, and endlessly interesting, and just because of the positioning of the bunker, which again at the very top level, is becoming more and more difficult to achieve because of simply by how far they hit the ball. They're probably flying these bunkers now.
The interesting thing, and as I said, it was the greens were absolutely immaculate, like rolled so true, very, very fast. But I was talking to, now, anybody who's familiar with Irish golf will know that there was a big controversy, because when the new hotel was established, what they did is they more or less doubled the subs for existing members, which prompted, like, you know, I don't know, half or a whole bunch of long-term members of the club to leave. And so there's a lot of ill taste in the mouth around the area as a result. And but what I found was interesting was that I was there on a Saturday, and the tee sheet was not quite empty, but fairly kind of sparse. Like, and you think Saturday on a nice day, you know, in the height of summer, you'd imagine the thing would be packed, and it just wasn't. So I wonder if there isn't, like, you know, as I said, this general ill will towards what happened. But I mean, to me, it seems like a reflection of what's happening across the country, or maybe not just in Ireland, but across golf in general, is that fees are going up. It's becoming more expensive. It's becoming, like, you know, 1300 euro or 1300 sterling bags in the pro shop, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, look, great course nonetheless. Michael Brennan. So this is, I thought this was interesting. He wins the Wyndham, like, fairly emphatically, I would argue, 64-63 over the weekend, basically killed the contest with five birdies in a row on the front nine on Sunday. But this is a guy, a year ago, he was winning on the PGA Tour Americas in Canada, then won, basically skipped the Korn Ferry Tour stage, and has won twice on the PGA Tour. Like, it feels like every week we're looking at a guy who's just shot up from nowhere to win on the PGA Tour, when my understanding was always it's really, really hard to win. But this guy, elite ball striker, do we say that about everybody nowadays? They're all elite ball strikers?
I think you can. I mean, I paid a visit the last week to the, it's the Hotel Planner Tour now.
We'll talk about that as well. Yeah, so you were there.
I was there on the Wednesday.
In Kelso.
At Kelso, in Scottish Borders. And I spent some time on the range. I had a chat with Robert Rock. He was there working. But what struck me was that this is sort of second division, if you like.
Yeah.
They were all hitting the ball beautifully. They're all swinging pretty much, a lot of them swinging pretty much the same and hitting the ball really, really well. So it strikes me that, and Gary can maybe comment on this, is that the ball striking is not the separating factor at pro level now, or it's less of a factor, and it's something else. It's the short game. It's mental. It's something other than hitting the ball, because it's almost a given that they all hit the ball well, and that this is, you know, as I say, second division level. So, and you go to any European Tour event, and you kind of get the same impression. The ball striking is just off the charts. So there's something else week to week, probably putting. It's what separates the winner from the rest. I'd be interested to hear what Gary thinks of that.
Yeah, I'd agree on that, John. I think, you know, the Challenger event is on this week in Killeen, and I think, you know, it's so different to what it was years ago because of the technology now is so similar for everybody. And it's very rare that you would play with, you know, a high ranked player that doesn't play strike the ball particularly well. Like my caddy last week, Greg Millen, caddies on main tour and PGA tour, and so the yardage, the difference in yardages to come work for me for a week is, you know, probably 30 yards, 40 yards off the tee, two clubs.
Yeah.
So they're all, you know, pit and pitching wedges, 145, 150 yards, you know, in normal summer conditions. And he, I don't know, I think he liked the fact that there was kind of a bit more guile in our game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all kind of same out there. And certainly they're so strong and fit. I think the gap is more prevalent now than even though it was, but it's definitely not as physical. I think, you know, short game coaches and putting coaches now are going to be kind of what the John Jacobs were of their day, type of thing, really, because with the advent of TrackMan and GC Quad and, you know, all the drivers and the clubs, they're so uniform now. There's no bad equipment out there. So, and they're learning to play a much faster game much earlier. So, I think if I was getting into the business, I'd be getting in as a sports shrink, because that's the tiny difference, really.
Yeah, I was actually in a chat with the South African lad, MJ Dafu. I think it's Dafu, you pronounce his name. He's actually top of the order of merit money list, whatever you call it, on that tour at the moment. And I was just interested. I mean, he hits the ball miles and miles.
Yeah.
And I said to him, I says, on average, I says, how many clubs do you actually use in a typical round of golf? And he had to think about it, he and his caddy, and they came back with 8.
Wow. Right.
Yeah, that's how many clubs he typically uses. I mean, obviously there's variations on that, but It wouldn't be often that it'd be more than 10, and it's certainly never 14, which it gets back to the guile aspect that Gary just mentioned, is that a lot of that has been eliminated at the top level. And I mean,
How interesting.
I'm the old fuddy-duddy here. I mean, I just find the top level, the playing of the game is less interesting than it used to be, because as I keep saying, nobody plays like Seve or Lee Trevino, so how can it be better?
So explain
Sure.
that. I mean, I understand obviously what it means to use 8 clubs or 10 clubs, but like, does that mean then that, let's say, for example, you've got a 60-degree lob, so like full, most of these pros hit a lob like 100 yards, like a 60-degree. So that means they're just manipulating the face of it, and they're not using like multiple wedges. They might be using, preferring that one wedge, or is it instead of hitting an 8 iron, they're like going down half an inch on a 7 iron because that's the club they like, or is that what it is?
No, well, if you do the math on it, like if you like in old money, a par five was what, 476 yards, I think. That's a short par four for these guys. Now, if they're hitting a 330 off the tee and they have 150 in, that old par five is a drive and a pitching wedge.
So they're playing to
So
specific target yards every single time, and they're finding
no, they just hit the ball so far.
that they,
Like
okay,
it,
Jesus.
when I was a kid growing up, the same as John, if you had a 450, 460 par four, it was a drive and a bit of timber. You know, that's just not the case anymore. And I was talking like the live event in New York was played at 7,600 yards, and the fairways were over fertilized and they were soft and the ball pitched and stopped. And it's the longest golf course they've played. So that at 7,600 yards for an amateur golfer is, I don't know the exact math, but it's about an 8,500 yard course. Because you're losing, let's say in normal speak, you're losing at least 300 to 400 yards minimum in run. Like there was a par four last week that Graeme McDowell had to lay up to a number, because Graeme is obviously one of the shortest hitters out there. And you know, the game has just changed enormously, but we cannot go designing golf courses that are 7,600. Like it's a bit like you playing off the Blues in Killeen, Fionn, with no run on the ball. That's what Bedminster was like
I
last
mean,
week
it's
for
enough
the
to
live
drive me
event.
to the funny farm to do that,
Yeah,
but
but you would never want to play the game. You know what I mean? It's because
no,
it's,
it's too
you know,
punishing.
you're gonna have a you're gonna have a the average ball striker is gonna have an 8-9 iron in for the third shots on par fours, you know, so no one wants to see that game. So,
No. Right, I'm conscious that time is slightly against us, so I appreciate. I know, Gary, you've got a really mad busy day. There's just, now, I didn't see any of this, I will confess, but I did read about it. So the US Women's Amateur Championship, which we don't really discuss women's amateur golf that much on the podcast, but it's worth highlighting today because the winner was 17-year-old Asterisk Tally, who has one of my favorite names in all of golf. She beat Japan's Anna Iwanaga. She beat her 8-6 in the 36-hole final. That's a fair thumping, all right. Now, anything I've read about Tally, I mean, she is 17, so she's the top-rated junior female golfer in America. Do we know, like, how good is she? A phenom or a phenom? Is she as good as these results suggest? Is it someone to look out for? Is she going to light up the women's game for years to come? Can we even say that based on this result?
I've got some experience of Asterisk Tally, albeit brief. She was in the Curtis Cup team, the American Curtis Cup team at Sunningdale 2 years ago, and she's as a 15-year-old, she saw off Lottie Ward in the singles that day. So, obviously, clearly special, whatever all those adjectives you just came out with, pretty much all the good ones apply, I think. I think she's won. That's going to make it. She's playing tour level golf now, I think. So she'll be winning before she's 20.
Jesus, she's a beautiful golf
I
swing.
think and I well, they all do, like, my God, they all want the Women's Scottish Open. I think John's point there is absolutely perfect. When you're looking at, you were, you know, chatting earlier about Michael Brennan, but when amateurs are playing tour level golf before they get out there, it's the same as Jackson Coyven. You know, they're and they don't come along very often, and we're very fortunate that Rory McIlroy came along, but when you have can't miss talents, they can generally get out on tour and feel completely comfortable in that environment. And Coyven is like that. Obviously, you know, even playing Curtis Cup at 15 years of age is absurd.
Yeah.
And we're probably seeing a bit more of that maybe in the women's game because it's not so power-based at the moment. I'm sure it will, unfortunately, be in years to come. But it's a bit like the women's tennis where they had a lot of very young champions. My only worry is, you know, 17, you go on tour, you know, it's you're a very old 27.
Is there a Michelle Wee factor to be wary of? You know,
there's prodigious teenage talent
who just burnt out.
Yeah, of course there is. But the level of money nowadays is that they can get out there for 10 years. And listen, on a female side, and Lorena Ochoa is the perfect example, maybe it's a wonderful thing. You just smash it for 10 years and then you decide to have a family and all of that stuff, you know, because I can't even fathom being on tour and being pregnant and trying to manage that. You know, it's such a different thing for the women. So maybe that could be a thing that we're not going to see a lot of older women, you know, on tour anymore. It's just going to be, there's going to be such a burnout, perhaps.
I'm not sure there's a solution to that. I mean, it's, my mind goes to Seve, who was world-class probably when he was 18 years old.
Yeah.
If you're that good that early, I mean, you've got to go for it. I mean, you're not going to say, well, I'm too young, I'm not going to do it. I'm good enough already. They're going to be on tour inside of 2 minutes. But I'm not sure there's a solution, but there's definitely a burnout factor.
There has to be.
Especially, and it seems to be, you know, this is a stereotype or a cliche, but it seems to be more prevalent in the women's game. I mean, Seve's the classic example in the men's game, but I can't think of too many others who've burnt out at the age of 35, having been, you know, world class in their late teens. But it's definitely a factor. But she's got a responsibility to herself, to her talent, to go for it. I mean, that's the conundrum, isn't it? I mean, you're not gonna give that up at the age of 17, thinking, well, I'll wait till I'm 22. She might not be as good when she's 22.
True.
Perish the thought. Gary, you mentioned Jackson Coyven, who grabbed the last FedEx Cup place. He finished tight 29th. He didn't play particularly well. He seems to be fighting a swing. And he looked, I mean, look, as this young kid. So clearly, maybe the pressure of getting into the FedEx. But, you know, he managed. He got the last place. So he'll be teeing it up at St. Jude. As will Rory McIlroy, who traditionally doesn't play the first event of the FedEx, but has changed his mind and says, no, you know, I'm going to tee it up at the St. Jude.
I know, but for Jackson Coyven, which is, I think, his fourth start to qualify.
It's amazing.
It's absurd. And to not play well and under the heat of trying to get in.
It's still shot 8-under, by the way, can we just say?
It's a remarkable performance. It really is.
Yeah, he's the same as Asterix Tally, by the way, that I saw him at the Walker Cup at Cypress Point almost a year ago, and he stood out a mile in that company.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not talking, it's not rocket science to spot the truly exceptional, even at that level. I mean,
are you coming over for lunch?
No, sadly. I couldn't get, accommodation was just off the charts. So
it is.
We thought about it, but it was just too expensive, sadly.
The Hotel Planner. So, as you said, the Hotel Planner from Thursday, it's at Killeen Castle. Max Kennedy, who we talked to last week, he finished 1-under, made the cut at Kelso, you know, playing decent stuff. So he'll be teeing it up this Thursday. Tickets are free. Like, you go on to the Hotel Planner event and you just get a ticket. Yeah. And as you said, John, like, you get to see like elite ball strikers and players who hit the ball an unbelievable distance. Just play right in front of you.
Yeah.
Just,
there's also a sprinkling of, you know, well-known names. I mean, I walked 9 holes watching Eddie Pepperell, who missed the cut. Chris Wood, former PGA champion, was there. He missed the cut. David Horsey was there, Mark Warren, guys that have been on tour for eons. I mean, and apart from Horsey, I tell you, they're all well, Pepperell's on tour, but the other guys are struggling to get their cards off
So it's
this.
interesting. Last year, my friend Rory caddied in the group that had Chris Wood in it. I think I asked you about this, Gary, at the time. And Chris, let's put it this way, Chris is not a man for conversation. Talk to no one. At one point, my friend's dad kind of said something, "Oh, nice shot," and Wood just walked by him, like clearly in either some kind of zone or the rudest man in the group. But no, but you're absolutely right. You're going to see some notable names who are still eking out something on the Hotel Planner Tour. I think it's a great opportunity. I'm again, so I don't know, Gary, if you can hang on for a few more or.
I got a split, guys. So,
All right. Well, listen, maybe John and I can discuss the last couple of
sure.
stories. So, listen, Gary, well done. Congratulations on the hole in one. Delighted for you. Well done in
Thanks.
making the cut. And sure, listen, keep trucking.
Cheers, guys. Thanks a million. Bye bye.
See you, Gary.
See you, John. Take care.
Cheers.
So, yeah, John, just like Wacker Neiman won again. He won at Trump Edminster. That's nine live victories over the past few seasons. So even though he's been dominant in terms of victories, looks like John Rahm's going to win the individual championship under their point system. And Bryson DeChambeau's Crushers won the team competition, just giving out all the details. But what I wanted to ask you about was, I don't know if you caught wind of Bryson DeChambeau was asked about what he saw as the appropriate next steps for Liv. And he gave a series of interviews. Now, you can't say that he's not an ambitious thinker, you know? So he wants Liv teams to have their own home golf courses operating almost as stadiums, so that you're shaking your head. No, this is not for you at all.
Well, excuse me, sorry about the cough. I mean, I can't take this guy seriously on almost any level. I mean, he just talks absolute nonsense.
Go on.
I mean, he's well known to be a follower of the current American president, who also routinely talks nonsense. I
Well,
mean,
who
you
won his?
see.
Can I just say, one is, I don't know, whatever number of club championships. The
Well, there you go.
videos of him cheating are just, or his caddy cheating on his
I
behalf
mean,
are.
it's beyond nonsensical.
Yeah.
I mean, it's some. I don't. There is a word to describe what we're witnessing with these guys. So I'm sorry. I mean, Liv. I admit my prejudice here. I mean, I've paid no attention to Liv since the very. I was at the very first event because I was working. I've never paid much attention since. I watched about 5 minutes of it this week because I was flicking through the channels and came across it, and I stopped for 5 minutes and then just kept going, which I think sums up certainly my attitude to it, and probably the attitude of many is it's just not that interesting. It's hard to care.
I don't disagree with you. I'm just, and I agree with you around Bryson. I find Bryson ridiculous. If he wasn't kind of, I'm not going to litigate. I take your point you made a number of weeks back that the PGA Tour can happily live without him. He doesn't seem to think so. He thinks that the PGA Tour is desperate to have him back. And but then also started talking about this new lead investor for Liv. Obviously, they're desperately looking for money. There's doubts, obviously, over the future of the league. What was interesting, though, is that that Brian Rolapp, PGA Tour CEO, he has stated unequivocally that there is no merger and no current merger discussions with Liv or the PIF, which is quite the step change from 2023 when they announced the framework agreement. Now, like, I'm assuming here that is that Liv, it's on its knees, it's bleeding profusely from everywhere. So why would you make a deal with a car with something that's going to be a carcass in a matter of months?
I mean, those comments just reflect the strength of the PGA Tour's position
Yeah.
compared with 2 years ago. I mean, why would they make a deal?
No,
There's
absolutely not.
no
And
need, you know.
like, clearly, for regardless of whether the PGA Tour can survive or not with Bryson DeChambeau or without him, The likelihood is that the likes of him, Ram, Neiman, should they get all this sorted out, and or if Liv does end up going by the wayside, as most people expect it to do, is that these guys will have a pathway back to the PGA Tour. Not others, but these
yeah.
guys will.
Yeah, I think that there has to, that's just the word. I mean, you couldn't just get rid of them completely. I mean, say, thanks no. very much, lads, you're done. There's got to be a way back. I'm sure there'll be lots of hoops to jump through. And I tell you that we've touched on this before, I think, but the biggest sufferers in this whole thing is the international team at the President's Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been, you know, gutted by the
and
number
the fans.
Of players. Yeah, well, that should be. And the, yeah, and why the PGA Tour don't allow anybody to play in the international team is beyond me, because it hurts the product that they own. I mean, it's cutting off your nose to spite their face, but then it just shows you the depth of feeling, you know, the animus towards the Liv guys. But far more of the international players have gone to Liv that would have been, you know, Neiman's a classic example. Plenty of the South Africans, you know, Burmester, those guys, and you know Smith, Leishman, over the past few years would all have made the team, and they've really suffered, and it's ruined the President's Cup as a spectacle.
Mm.
It's just not what it could be. I mean, it would be really competitive, I think, if the international team had their bet could put out their best 12 players. I think it would be a well worth watching and rival the Ryder Cup.
Sure.
But not the way it is now.
So anyway, Bryson's plan of home stadiums for Liv teams, pile of nonsense.
Oh, well, that's never going to happen. I mean,
no, it won't happen. Of course it won't happen. no, absolutely not. I mean, he's still holding on to this idea that, like, it would be good for golf if players could move from Liv to the PGA and back again and play different. Yeah, look. And well, so
that, yeah, I had some sympathy with that argument way back at the beginning of Liv. I never understood why the PGA Tour or the European Tour were so down on the guys who went to Liv, because, you know, it showed to me a lack of confidence in their own product.
True.
You know, it said, well, we think we're good enough, and you can come and play if you want, and go and, you know, that would have been, to me, it would have been a much more mature reaction to the whole thing back at the beginning. But not now. I mean, now it's just, you know, they're basically stomping on the corpse, if you like. I mean, it's not a very edifying, you know, spectacle. But I understand it. I mean, there's so much bad feeling behind the scenes. And I do hear, by the way, that John Rahm desperately wants to come back. So,
I mean,
there will be a way for him, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Also, as well, is that, like, I mean, again, I'm reading all of this secondhand. So one of the options that in order to secure the future of Liv was that they offer equity to the players, the likes of a John Rahm, who still owed a ton of money from the contract that he signed, and with no realistic way of recouping that. But why on earth, if I was John Rahm, why would I take equity in something that has never made any money? Like, what? That to me, that seems like I am not an expert in business, but that to me seems like just like an idiotic move right from the off.
Well, that's true of everybody. I mean, why would anybody? That's why the guy's hunting around trying to find sponsors, and he claims to have one. But I'll believe that when it happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, who in their right mind is going to, as you say, invest money in a product that has lost money from day one?
I mean, and that it's only, it's only really, and its only selling point was that it had two of the biggest stars in world golf, and, you know, in all likelihood, we'll lose both of them. Anyway, right, okay, so the Liv saga continues. This week we have the FedEx Championship starting at Memphis St. Jude. Rory's going to tee it up. I mean, I guess it gives us something to talk about over the next 4 or 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've got the Hotel Planner Tour in Killeen Castle from Thursday. Tickets free. Get to see some great, great players. I would encourage anyone to go out, because you're standing right next to them as they hit beautiful
definitely.
Shots.
And you get to watch golf, the best way to watch golf.
Yeah, agreed.
Which is down the line.
Yes, actually, a very good point. Yes.
When you're outside the ropes, you watch inside on all the time. You don't get the same perspective. down the line is by far the best way to watch.
That's a very good point, and you're absolutely right, because if you stand behind and you watch him hit the shot, it's just like, holy moly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, John, as always, much appreciated. Thank you very much. Have a good week. Nathan will be with Shane for the Rhine line on Thursday, so you know how to get the questions into him. We'll talk to you again next week. All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little J.D. Starter kid right here.